Oh, that. Isn't that beautiful? That's all that record did. It was just to say to people, have you forgotten what's beautiful? Have you forgotten what's gorgeous? I'll show you. This is what it is. Don't forget.
I've loved you for a long, long time. I know this love is real. Don't matter how it all went wrong. That don't change the way I am. I don't believe that time can heal this wound I'm speaking of. Ah, there ain't no cure. Ain't no
songs. First we take Manhattan and Ain't No Cure for Love that I was writing at the time. She had earlier versions of them that I later recorded. And I'm Your Man somehow coincided with a change of sensibility in the marketplace also.
Now in these last records, I think he has found a way to present his music exactly as he would have framed it. I mean, he carved the frames precisely as he wished. Where earlier on, he let the Nashville Cats push that music around, and you know, he let us push it around some, and as an experimentation, I think it was interesting, but he was always able to extricate what was it about that what we were doing that was true to him and what was not. And I think these last two records are more accurate to his vision.
I think her take on the change in my writing is true. Writing on a synthesizer, on keyboards, able to set up rhythms now and arrangements before I present them to musicians has changed my approach quite a great deal, because at a certain point I couldn't gain the respect of the musicians I was working with because I couldn't get my ideas across. I didn't know the musical vocabulary, and I somehow couldn't duplicate for them the ideas that I had in my mind, so I was, in a certain sense, at their mercy. With the keyboard, with the drum patterns available to me, with the ability to present the arrangement in almost its completed form before the rehearsal starts, has enabled me to materialize my ideas much more easily. But I feel I'm just at the beginning of this process now, and musical creation, personal life, I think there is a certain moment when you do have to look into the face of your own activity and discern exactly what you're doing and who you are, and that did begin to happen to me around 83, the beginning of various positions when somehow the sense of time, the seriousness of the enterprise, the failure I'd had in the past to really get my ideas across, all those things bothered me very much, and I did apply myself with I always thought I worked hard, but I began to apply myself with a very special dedication to this dismal activity called songwriting.
Now in Vienna, there's 10 pretty women. There's a shoulder where death comes to cry. There's a lobby with 900 windows. There's a tree where the doves go to die. There's a piece that was torn from the morning, and it hangs in the gallery of frost. Aye, 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 aye. Take this waltz, take this waltz. Take this waltz with a clamp on its jaws. Oh, I want you, I want you, I want you. On a chair with a dead magazine. In the cave at the tip of the lily. In some hallway where love's never. Bed where the moon has been sweating, in a cry filled with footsteps and sand. I, I take this waltz, take this waltz, take its broken waste in your hand. This waltz, this waltz, this waltz, with its very own breath of brandy and death, dragging its tail in the sea.
You've just heard Take This Waltz, which is a translation I did of a very great poem by Federico Garcia Lorca. A poet who touched me very deeply, a poet who provided a landscape which I could inhabit, and people have been kind enough to say that I've done the same thing for them.
Yes. Seeing him in concert this last year was very much that way. It was like you entered the room and you walked around in this magical room and then left and it was over. But it was much like one's dreams, you know, it's much like the thoughts you have in the dead of night, and that's an artist. An artist is able to pull you in like Rothko, and you're there only when you're standing in front of that painting, and then when you leave, it's gone. It's hard to carry that Rothko with you, and I think that Leonard's like that too.
Yeah, I dreamed about you, baby.
Exactly where you place it. I mean, you've really got to think about who you're talking about. you're not just talking about Randy Newman, you know, who's fine. You know, you're not just talking about Bob Dylan, who's sublime. You know, you're talking about King David. You're talking about Homer. You're talking about Dante. You know, you're talking about, you know, Milton. You're talking about Wordsworth. You know, you're talking about some spirits that are, we haven't come up with descriptions for their contribution, for their embodiment of our highest possibilities. So, you know, I don't think it represents a particularly modest or virtuous assessment of one's own work to think of oneself as a minor poet. Now, it's not bad. I've loved the minor poets. I mean, Herrick, a poet like Herrick, you know, who's not considered one of the great, you know, ornaments of the tradition, but a small gem in the crown, you know. And I really do feel that. I feel that, you know, the enormous luck I've had in being able to make a living and to have never had to have written one word that I didn't want to write, to be able to have satisfied that dictum I set for myself, which was, you know, not to work for pay, but to be paid for my work. You know, just to be able to have able to satisfy those standards that I set for myself has been an enormous privilege. But I don't fool myself. I mean, I know the game I'm in, and I know the tradition I'm in. I feel very privileged to have been accepted at whatever level. And when I wrote, you know, about Hank Williams 100 floors above me in the Tower of Song, I'm not trying to present some kind of, you know, inverse modesty. You know, I know where Hank Williams stands in the history of popular song. I mean, Your Cheating Heart, you know, songs like that are, you know, sublime in his own tradition. And I feel myself a very minor writer. Now, you know, I've taken a certain territory and I've occupied it and I've tried to maintain it and administrate it with the very best of my capacities. And I will continue to administrate this tiny territory until I'm too weak to do it. But I understand where this territory is. I said to Hank Williams, how lonely does it get? Hank Williams hasn't answered yet, but I hear him coughing all night long. Oh, 100 floors above me in the Tower of Song. I was born like this, I had no choice. I was born with the gift of a golden voice and 27 angels from the great beyond. They tied me to this table right here in the Tower of Song. Now I bid you farewell, I don't know when I'll be back. They're moving us tomorrow to that tower down the track, but you'll be hearing from me, baby, long after I'm gone. I'll be speaking to you sweetly from a window in the Tower of Song.
Tower of Song. BBC Radio 1's special profile of Leonard Cohen was compiled by Pete Frame and the producer, Kevin Howlett.
Thank you very much.